Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Implementing the recent transportation bill and making sure those dollars are getting out to the countryside for things like rural broadband and spending the money on those roads and bridges.
Allison Rivera with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Specific to the farm bill, those conversations are going to start ramping up in the next 6 to 8 months. We want to protect voluntary conservation programs that our members use. We want to make sure that those programs stay viable and well-funded. Again, protecting against foreign animal disease and working through this next farm bill to make sure that we have that safety net there that we've had the last 5 years with the FMD bank. There's so many things, Tony, I could talk about, but I hope everyone knows just how busy we are here at NCBA. It's never a dull moment, and we certainly have plenty to work on every day.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Who farmed here in the 80s and 90s and 2000s? Anybody? Remember how much they cared about your expenses back then?
That's Dave Fogel with Advanced Trading. He was speaking recently at Commodity Classic and focusing on the fact that the market will crash.
When we had a Chicago Board of Trade pit, you guys remember that? So it's gone. Pit's gone. It's gone. There's not even pits anymore. There's just a floor over what used to be the pit. How many of you guys sent a postcard to those folks saying, I'm sorry you lost your job? Anybody? You don't care, right? It doesn't affect you. And the world's not going to care about your expenses. But here's what I remember happening in the 08 and 12 year that was kind of concerning for us now. When and if the market starts crashing, how long does it take for your expenses to catch up to that? It's a couple years, right? Your landlord's not going to drop your rate the second you guys, drop the market. It doesn't work that way. And, so if and when it does break, and nobody cares about your break even, no more than you guys care. When it breaks, it's going to be really difficult. You can end up with $16 beans and make no more money than you did at 10. Because the margins are, the costs are unbelievable right now. It's almost as volatile as the market, right? There's things you guys are buying that are four times higher than a year ago. So you have to really be careful thinking that prices can't go down, because your expense structure is not going to let you, it won't let you do it. It's just not going to let you do it. So find a way to do something you can repeat. There's different ways to do that. But don't let the year before influence you. If you made a mistake the year before, it's because you did something that was not speculative, but you were guessing. So if you guys miss the market this year, it crashes by fall. It's not that the next year I got to sell earlier. It's just that you didn't have a plan. It has to go up. It can't go down. And that's, one of the problems with news is you guys grab on to whatever's bullish and you don't let go. And so, no doubt, South America, the drought was really bullish. It probably still is. This Ukraine thing so far is really bullish. But it's not going to last forever. There's going to be a day where the market's going to decide, that's old news. We've already kind of done some things. This country's going to do more exporting. We're going to ration here. Markets will adjust. They always do. But something that's bullish doesn't last forever. It eventually has to, end, and then something else comes in its place. Lots of something else's probably. And those could be good or bad. I don't know yet. We'll see. So be careful trying to copy years. When I first started doing this, I think the corn limit was 10 cents, and I think the bean limit was 25, I think. Okay? And there was very, very few days we touched 10 or 25. It's just rare to see corn and beans go up a dime or down a dime, 25 on beans. I don't remember the wheat limit. But it was just rare. Now we move $1.87 in 24 hours. $1.87. So if you don't have anything going, if you don't have some type of a position, something sold, using the futures or options market, if you're just kind of winging it, do you really think you can keep up with this thing by just making a decision during all this? Once again, when this thing breaks, days. I'm not saying it's going to break tomorrow, but when it breaks, it'll be over in days. You won't believe how fast it'll change. So the speed of price.
It's Dave Fogel with Advanced Trading. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think the biggest thing you have to watch is the demand situation here in the U.S. It has been very good. Old crop demand has been good. New crop demand, very good.
Greg McBride is a broker with Allendale on what to watch with soybeans.
We know that Brazil is down from where they thought they were about 4 months ago. Now, I say that, and the biggest thing to remember is, you know, at 125, or like Conab said yesterday, 122 point something for soybeans, that's not a failure of a crop for them. That's still an awfully big crop. It is, you know, disappointing that they didn't come in and get that record that they were hoping for. But, you know, we do have a little bit tighter ending stocks on beans as we go in, and we think about what the USDA told us last week. I mean, the acreage conversation, I don't think is necessarily over, but having 4 million extra acres of beans this year definitely doesn't give you a reason to think that we're going to see things tighten up as we start to talk about new crop. Now, the old crop is a different story. That's a that's fairly tight. We've got good prices. We're definitely overvalued, but it doesn't matter. If the funds want to be buyers, they're going to find a way to buy it.
But when we look at cotton, how does USDA paint that picture?
Well, so the USDA, they kind of punted on this report for the U.S. side of things. They left the old crop ending stocks at 3.5 million bales, which is fine. The demand for U.S. cotton is still very good. Now, we are coming off this past week with a seasonal low for marketing year low for export sales, but overall it's been very good. The one thing I would note in one of the things you saw in the market today was you had the world ending stocks number come in higher than last month. So they raised us from 82.6 million bales up to 83.4, and so you saw the old crop cotton take a little bit of a hit today. The July was down just slightly. You had the May down a little bit more. But you saw that spreading into the new crop, and you saw the December contract finish over a penny higher. So they are definitely really starting to focus in on, say, that West Texas area where it is extremely dry. That drought monitor, it doesn't lie. It is dry out there, and they are dry for the next 7 to 10 days.
So now that the USDA report is behind us, where should the focus be now?
Rain, and more rain. we have enough rain, and we, you know, here this morning in northern Illinois, we had the snow coming in, and the eastern Corn Belt is wet. Eastern Iowa and Minnesota and parts of Missouri are extremely wet right now, and that's good. That's what we want to see. Now, it will give a lot of people a reason to start talking about planting delays. That probably is going to be the case, but with the technology the way it is nowadays, the machinery that we have, we can plant awful fast. We need, you know, 4 to 7 days in a lot of places of just that much of a window, and we can plant an awful lot of crops. So the biggest thing that, you know, as we move into to mid-April, will be conversations about delayed planting. But, you know, as we get further into the north and in Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, and Nebraska, you know, April 10th to 15th is about the earliest you can start anyway. So, it's not going to be that delayed in some areas, but it will be a problem, for some guys, maybe in the eastern Corn Belt, especially, like, just like 2019, but hopefully with less prevent plant issues.
That's Greg McBride, a broker with Allendale. I'm Tony St. James. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Nitrogen fertilizer prices have increased dramatically, particularly since the summer of 2021.
University of Illinois ag economist Gary Schnitke.
We saw those for nitrogen fertilizer prices in the $700 to $800 per ton range, and those have increased pretty much since then. The last reading we had was at $1,516 per ton, and that was in late March of 2023. Those prices have been above $1,500 since February, so as of right now, the Russian-Ukraine conflict hasn't impacted those prices much, but we expect those prices to increase in the future. Anhydrous ammonia prices typically are related to two major prices. The first is natural gas, Natural gas is a major ingredient in the production of nitrogen fertilizers. So as nitrogen fertilizer prices go up, you expect to see higher anhydrous ammonia prices. The other one is corn. And typically as corn prices go up, you see higher anhydrous ammonia prices.
Now, what about North American fertilizer manufacturers?
There has been a great deal of emphasis on placed on the response of North American producers. There are four major ones: CF Industries, Nutrien, Koch Industries, and Iowa Fertilizer Companies. There is concern that they have market power and that they may be increasing price in this situation. However, factors outside of those companies' control have led to these higher prices as well, and that would be the COVID pandemic, general price inflation, and the divergence in natural gas prices between Europe and the United States, and now the Ukraine-Russia war. We would expect that conflict to have major impacts on natural gas and nitrogen prices, as Russia is a major supplier of both of those commodities. In particular, that could cause a redirection of supply from North America and the producers that provide North America.
And other suppliers?
12% of the fertilizer, nitrogen fertilizer used in the United States comes from outside of the United States, with Trinidad and Tobago being a major source of that. As other countries need fertilizer, and that would include Brazil, Brazil imports much of its nitrogen fertilizer, with 20% of that coming from Russia. If they need to look for a new supply, they could look for that supply from the United States and as well Trinidad and Tobago. In any case, that is likely to have increases in nitrogen prices here. It is, however, fortunate that we do have a relatively robust North American fertilizer industry, because we are in a dramatically different place than Europe and Brazil, and we also have a relatively plentiful supply of natural gas. So the impacts of those, while they will be large, are likely to be less large than, say, in Brazil and Western Europe.
But maybe we haven't seen the worst yet.
The Russian-Ukraine situation is likely to be more impactful for 2023 production than for 2022 production. Most American farmers have had their plans made for production and often have most of their inputs bought for the 2022 year. So the 2023 years when we're going to begin to really see the impacts, more of the impacts of this, other than just a simple decline in farm income as a result of higher natural gas and nitrogen prices.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
It's the time of year for both especially the lightweight calves, stocker type calves, and the fed cattle. Typically near a spring peak seasonally this time of year.
Dr. Daryl Peel is a livestock economist at Oklahoma State University, looking at the current market situation for cattle.
And, you know, for the calves, we had a sort of an early mid-February peak ahead of the war in Ukraine. The pressure from that caused the markets to go down. They did come back up and actually put in then another high about a week ago on the feeder cattle market. Fed cattle markets, you know, again, probably close to a spring peak here in the short term, kind of holding on to steady, maybe a little bit higher at the end of the week in the northern plains. But I think, you know, all in all, you know, probably the timing would suggest that we're probably going to see these markets grind a little bit lower here in the coming week. And, you know, for the futures markets continue to struggle. Obviously, grain markets are still extremely volatile, but under pressure generally from, you know, not only the war in Ukraine. We had a prospective plannings report that was, from a corn standpoint, at least, not friendly from a corn user standpoint, with smaller than expected acreage suggesting higher prices yet for corn. So all of that is keeping the cattle markets in general and specifically the feeder cattle markets under continued pressure.
Now, Dr. Peel also pays attention to the latest in beef demand and box beef. What's he seeing?
You know, it's been somewhat higher. It's been working its way higher over the last month. Now, it kind of topped out last week, and call it flat really more than anything. for last week. But that said, it's the time of year. In fact, it's not uncommon to see box beef prices sort of move up from March to April and then hold steady or even pull back slightly in April before they do a real stronger spring run up or a grilling season run up in May ahead of Memorial Day. I think we're already kind of starting that. It looks like we're kind of starting that seasonal uptrend. The next couple of weeks may be a little bit iffy, but in general, it looks to me like these markets are getting ready for grilling season. So we're seeing, across the board, the primals are at or above year-ago levels. And so I think we're in at this point, in fairly good shape from the standpoint of what that suggests about beef demand. Part of that demand picture for many months, really all of last year, was stronger exports, and that has continued so far this year. So we've got data now for January and February. Beef exports are up a little bit over 9% so far this year, and it varies a bit from market to market. The continuing strength and the rapidly growing China-Hong Kong market is really the key to that, and that continues very strong. And actually, Japan, South Korea, actually for the first 2 months of the year, South Korea is a little bit bigger than Japan and may overtake it in the coming months. But those are our two biggest markets, but rapidly closing on them is number three, China-Hong Kong. And those three markets together continue to be the mainstay of our international beef demand. You know, when you combine the strength of domestic beef demand, we're watching it. There's certainly some threats and some things to keep an eye on. But right now, I don't see any real concerns on the domestic side. And, we continue to see these strong export markets. And so until or unless something changes, beef demand looks pretty good when you combine that with the supply fundamentals. Again, there's reasons for a lot of the optimism we have going forward from this point.
And admits there are some issues.
We've got lots of other issues, drought and other things that may impact that timing and the way that plays out. But the general trend is certainly for supportive supply fundamentals in the beef cattle industry.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Our impression in Bloomington, working, we work with probably 800, 900, maybe 1,000 country grain elevators. So we have the luxury of seeing grain move or not. So it's pretty easy for us to tell whether you guys have sold 21, not sold 21. Are you selling 22, not selling 22?
That's Dave Fogel. He's with Advanced Trading, speaking recently at Commodity Classic on one of the biggest challenges that producers face.
And just kind of looking at numbers, it looks like most people sold 21 crop for the most part. I would say the average customer that we see on our site, not our advanced trading farmer customers, just typical grain customers or elevators, I would say we're 90% sold on corn and beans for 21 crop. And we probably missed the market by $2 plus on corn and maybe $2 to $3 on soybeans. It's not an easy market to manage right now, right? But most people are behind. And as far as the 22 crop goes, very little done so far. And what has been done, it's, again, well below the market, but we've had ranges that, I've done this so long, but there are people trying to figure out how to compare this year to other years. And I don't think you can do that. I don't think there's anything you can look at to say, this is like 08, this is like 12, this is like 95, 96, if you know what happened that year. It has pieces of all that stuff, So we're coming off 2 years of an epidemic, the COVID thing. 2 years where things just got totally rocked for us. When it first started, we lost a lot of demand type of things. We lost workers. We lost a lot of, a lot of things then. And then just to kind of follow that up, we decided to have one of the biggest droughts we've ever seen in South America. And it really made a big difference in the size of their soybean crop, right? So that was that. And then, we were looking for something else to kind of talk about, so we decided to have a war in Europe. That was the last piece here. So now you've got three things that have never happened before together. I've never seen them. No one's ever seen them. And so now we're focused on, what's next. And so the Ukraine thing, I'm not going to get into the markets a lot because you'll see why in a minute. But the Ukraine thing is important. They raise a lot of corn. They raise a lot of wheat. And if they end up, they're going to try and plant. I know they are. But if they end up with not as much, acreage planted and not as much shipping as they hoped, it's a heck of a deal for all of us. What is it, 1.5 billion bushels of corn that the world would lose if they don't plant? That's a lot of grain. So Next big things, besides what happens in Europe, is going to be March 31st. You're going to get an acreage report. And that was already a big deal before all this stuff happened in Europe, because we're trying to figure out the corn-bean acreage fight, right? And then after that, if we don't have a good spring and don't get in the fields well, or if we don't grow it well, it's going to be just crazy. And so we'll see. Hopefully we'll have a good crop. We need a good crop. We really do. And we'll see if we do, we don't. We don't control it. Nobody here controls whether or not we have it. So we'll go from there. 12 steps. So basically, one of the things I always talk about in different ways when I come to any meeting, including I probably have spoke here 10 times in the last 15 years, sometimes by myself. Tommy Grisafi, one of my partners, has been here and spoke. We did a panel a couple years ago with some of our brokers and research guys. So when I come up here, the hardest part of our job is to try and convince you folks there's nobody out there that knows what the market's going to do. And I'm going to tell you again today that's true, and you're going to go home and you're not going to believe me. You're going to start looking for someone that can tell you what the market's going to do. It's what you guys do.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This is how people put a different spin on what we do out here.
Steve Milanka is co-founder of My Job Depends on Ag, how those outside of the industry may not understand.
Somebody sent me a YouTube video from Bill Mayer, a night show host guy that just slammed the heck out of almonds grown in California, when it is absolutely a great non-perishable protein product that could be delivered to people that are hungry all over the world. But in any case, he blasted California Ag for using 80% of the water available in California. Now, I want to explain that. Here's the real spin on that, Tony. The good Lord every year, most years, gives us a wonderful snowpack in the Sierra Nevadas along the eastern fringe of our entire state. And this snowpack melts every spring like it has since the beginning of time. And it comes down through the mountains, down into the major rivers at the bottom of the valley where this ag is, and it goes out the San Francisco Bay to the ocean. 85 to 90% of all that water the good Lord gives us is gone. That only leaves 10%, we'll say. You split that 10 in half, 5% goes to the fish and game. All the wildlife refuges get all their water as they should. That leaves 5%. California Ag uses 80% of 5%. We've been screaming about just storing some more water. 150 years ago, this is how I try to explain it. 150 years ago in California, when there were no dams and all the snow melted every summer and went out to the ocean, it has done it since the beginning of time. And that was okay because there was nobody here. There's 40 million people here. The snow is in the northern third of the state. Ag's in the center of the state. There's 40 million people in the southern part of the state. You got to move the water to the people. And if we saved another 10% and left 80% for our wildlife, our rivers, our fish, and so forth, we have plenty of water for everybody. Some years, there's 4 million acre feet of water melted out of the mountains. Some years, like right now, it's only 400,000 acre feet. And it varies, and it always has. So if we can capture that water during the wet years, we got enough water for everybody. That's the real story.
So how can you tell your story?
I would say, to be an advocate of agriculture, you could say to that person, you can ask them one thing and tell them another, and ask them if they've ever tried to grow their own food. And then I would say to them that we feed 300 million people three times a day in the USA. A lot of it comes from Central California. And because your food is so readily available and cheap, you don't have to think about it. It gives you a chance to go out and pursue a career of a lifetime, working in All Ag Radio Network, working at John Deere. You don't have to worry about your food. It's there. It may not be there pretty soon. And if that happens, we got problems.
And if you want to learn more about My Job Depends on Ag,
there's a lot of different things on the web that you can find of what we've done. But primarily, it's all about awareness and letting people know that where their food comes from. It does come from a grocery store, but it comes from someplace else before that.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We got to pay attention to these weekly reports, and I think, you know, the shipment part of it may be more important than the sales part of it. This year, particularly this time of year this year. So to reach the current USDA export forecast of just under 15 million bales, we're going to need to be shipping 500,000 bales every single week if that's left in the crop year, and we haven't done that yet.
Senior economist with Cotton Incorporated, John Devine.
So the pressure's on. We can see if we can do it. And then, you know, at the end of the crop year, we were also hanging over merchants' heads. They have a, you know, a 20 cent per pound drop in the market. Let me take a look at the difference between July futures and December futures. So we've been experiencing a lot of volatility. I think the shipping crisis and the shipments and how things pan out for the rest of the crop year could be another factor contributing to volatility over the next few months.